wish life was like more forgiving in the department where I should bring more to the table. I wish I was able. What can I do? The things I want to do. The things I want to do.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Stressed, Depressed, and Anxious with your host, Local Neighborhood Baby. Today, we have the awesome Joel. I'm going to allow him to introduce himself because his show is amazing. And if you haven't heard it, you've probably been living under a rock. Joel, please take it away.
Well, thank you so much for having me. And thanks for that introduction and for hyping up my show. Yeah. So my name is Joel Kaskinen. I use he, him, his pronouns. I am a podcaster, a communicator, an activist, a social media manager, and above all else, a genuinely flawed human that just is trying to connect with other people and to share my experiences in the world to make it a better place. I live with mental health challenges with anxiety, depression, and PTSD. They're my three, like, I call them the trifecta. But so that definitely impacts my life and how I approach different things in the world. But it all kind of started, well, I guess I've had anxiety forever and lived with depression, but didn't have the language to kind of put it into words or understanding. And then like my real, like deep, deep depression and PTSD started after I responded to a student suicide about 3 years ago now. So yeah, I decided after I was finally able to start talking about my experiences to create a podcast so that way I could share my experiences and what I was going through, but also to connect with others so that way people know that they're not alone and also so I could feel less alone in my hurt and in my pain. So my show is It's All in My Head, and I actually coined the name of my show as a kind of reformation or a resurrection of the phrase that you are told when you are struggling with mental health. People often say, oh, it's all in your head. It's all in your head. And I decided it is all in my head because it's fucking real. So I'm going to resurrect that and take it back and reclaim it and name it. And that is why I came up with the title of my show. So yeah, I interview people about their stories with lived experiences. And I ultimately I'm just trying to create a community of people who understand that mental health is real and normalize the conversation and share their shame or their struggles or their past experiences or their current experiences and just open up a platform to be able to be vulnerable and real without stigma or judgment or misunderstanding.
Amen. Well, you heard it here first. He's an icon. He's a legend. He is the moment. And I love the podcast name. It's all in my head. Actually, it's so funny because when I first came across your podcast and I read that as the name of the podcast, my nerdy mind instantly went to like Harry Potter. And I was thinking about Dumbledore's infamous quote of like, just because it's all in your head doesn't mean it's isn't real. And I feel like
you're
that
the second
connects.
Person to make this reference. That's so fun.
Classic millennial, I know. But yes, that's what that made me think of. And yeah, I love the podcast again. Like, please, please, please go check this out if you have not already. All right. So just to dive in, I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the more recent things that have been making you feel the unholy trinity, stressed, depressed, and anxious. I know that you had said that you had been a little bit stressed or depressed or anxious about a couple things, one being March Madness, and then of course, winter and work. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I don't know if any of your fans, listeners, audience based are into sports or into March Madness, but I assume that everyone is. I'm a huge, 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 huge college sports fanatic. So actually my background is in higher education. So I used to work in that world. And when you work with student athletes, you become very obsessive with what they do and how you can give them a leg up in their success. And while I am zero athletically inclined and I cannot walk without falling and tripping most of the time, I'm abundantly impressed by people that are younger than me who are so beyond talented at their craft. And so I just really fell in love with college athletics. And so March Madness is a big, big deal for me because I just think it's really cool to watch all of these young people showcase their talents at the biggest stage. But with that comes so much stress because I have a few teams that I absolutely adore. So being from Northern Michigan, I love Michigan and Michigan State basketball programs. Moving to South Dakota and attending graduate school at the University of South Dakota, I'm a big USD fan. And our women's basketball program has been very good the last couple of years. And so I follow those teams very, very religiously. And then on the men's side of things, I'm a huge Gonzaga fan. One of my best friends went to Gonzaga and we are both big time college athletics fans. And so I've fallen in love with them as well. So this year, none of my teams are doing as well as we have in the last couple of years. So that has been fully stressing me out. Yeah. So I just watch and I just get anxious and I just want all of these young people to do really well. And like seeing the emotions that they have when their teams win or when their teams lose or, you know, whatever, I feel for them because I've worked with that population. I've worked with people who've participated in college athletics. And so it's just, I know how much is on the line for them. And it's just really, really, I don't know, their feelings and emotions resonate with me when they're putting it all on the line to be national champions. So yeah, that's been super stressful lately. And yet I'm a masochist and I continue watching and I make myself feel all of these anxieties.
I mean, we all like a little thrill. And it's so funny because the audience members, the babies, as I like to call them, they're really from all over. They have a huge diverse set of interests. So I'm sure a lot of them are into March Madness. Me personally, I really just have heard of the phrase March Madness or have absolutely no idea like what it was until you just explained it. And I also envy people like yourself who really closely follow these types of sports. And your reasoning is super wholesome. Like typically people are just like watching these things because no, like, I don't know. It's just like, it seems like more of a thing to do and it's fun to talk about, but you kind of talking about it from the perspective of really even caring about the future of these student athletes is really wholesome. And I love that. But yeah, it's kind of, that's funny watching a sport or watching something that you enjoy or anything competitive, I'm sure would make you feel a little anxious as well.
Well, and it's funny too, for me, I was not a big sports person ever. Like I said, I am the most uncoordinated, unathletic person in the entire world. It comes with being 6'4" and gangly and not having any control of my limbs. But when I started working in higher education and, you know, working with student athletes, that's when I really kind of fell in love with watching sports. I grew up in a family where all of my siblings and my father are big sports people. They always had some sport on TV and they were always out in the backyard shooting hoops or playing volleyball or foursquare or whatever. And I just was not into it, mostly because I couldn't do it, but that's okay. I just didn't understand the enjoyment that you could have when your brain isn't fully developed and your body's not fully developed and you're not good at something, you naturally don't have interest in it. And so really kind of coming into the sports world as an adult has been fun. But yeah, I really do enjoy it. I enjoy thinking about what these athletes are doing academically and athletically. The other thing that I really think is cool is I have zero competitive bone in my body. I'm the kind of guy that's just like, everyone have fun. You do you. I'ma do me. We're all gonna like laugh and clap and high five at the end. And it's all cool. So the fact that these people take it so seriously and like, especially like, if you go to watch something like the Super Bowl or March Madness or what have you at a sports bar where people are like fully there to watch these sports and they are so into it, the culture and the environment is so unlike anything else in the world. And that's also something cool. Like the camaraderie of it does not matter who you are, what your background is, what your color of your skin is, your creed, your religion, your sexuality, where you came from. everyone can buy into watching sports together at a bar. And that to me is really fun. And so, yeah, I don't know where I was going with that. I kind of went on a tangent, but.
No, I love that. You've just sold me on this whole thing. I mean, this is a great pitch. And it's so funny that you say that you are not a competitive person, because I'm completely the opposite. I had an interest in sports growing up from the perspective of playing certain sports. So I enjoyed, I was really a girly girl, but at the same time, I always wanted to join in because I do have a competitive bone, but it is nasty. Like I never really wanted, it wasn't really about winning for me. It was about humiliating the opponent. It was about crushing your soul. Like it didn't matter, even if it was outside of sports, but if it was anything competitive, that was my objective when I was younger. And that's kind of why I took myself out of those games or whatever, because I was like, either I need to play sports that are more like tennis or that are more like, you know, not team sports, or it's just going to be problematic because my attitude, I was not trying to show good sportsmanship. I was not trying to shake your hand afterwards. I wanted blood. And yeah, I mean, I like that about you, that you're not a competitive person.
I think it's really funny because all of my friends, or the majority of my close friends, are very competitive people. And even just like in general life stuff, they always seem to make things a competition. And I'm like, you know, you all can fight for it. I will, like, even the last breadstick, for example, like, it's yours. No worries. Like, I don't care. I'm such a chill dude. And my like one friend's, they totally changing topics here, but like along the lines of competition, my one friend is like super, super jealous. Like she does not do well, even if like me or like one of our other close friends are like hanging with other people. Like she has to have the attention on her.
Oh, I could never.
I mean, it's so funny. She's a decently new friend. I met her through a couple of other friends and she kind of just like latched onto our friend group. And I don't know, it's very funny to me that she's like that, because I tell her all the time, I'm like, you know, like I have other friends and you are not the center of my world. I love you and I appreciate
you. You are not the main character.
Yeah, exactly. I love you and I appreciate our friendship, but the fact that you are calling and texting and like, literally, like she'll look at like Be Real and she'll be like, oh, you're with so-and-so? Like text me to ask, like, where was my invite? I'm like, babe, I have other friends.
Ew, that is so gross. I know people like that, or I've known people like that. Definitely cut them off because I can't deal. And
yes, she's definitely getting there. Like I said, love her, appreciate the friendship, but I'm like, there's people like that, that I'm just like, that is too much energy for me.
It's always too much energy. And I'm kind of messy. This is like probably more so part of my toxic traits, but I like that kind of a person infiltrating a friend group in general, just because it's fun. It's fun to like, just be like, oh my God, here she goes again.
That's what we all do.
It adds a little spice to the situation, but I personally don't want to deal with it. I'd rather indirectly watch the whole thing implode, but don't call my phone. Yeah. Don't call my phone. And that's kind of how I feel about that. But yeah, I mean, I've had some situations really go left. I mean, this is like a mini story, but in college, there's this girl and we worked at the same three-story Marshalls on Boylston Street in Boston, because I was going to BU at the time. And anyway, she was very much like an associate, you know, it was just kind of like, we worked there. Sometimes we'd have like the same shift. And so when we'd be walking back to the dorms and stuff, like we just walk together, sometimes we'll stop for dinner. And it was a very light friendship. That's just like once or twice a month. And she was always, what I remember about her was that she was always texting her boyfriend, and he was like a military guy, and constantly like always checking up on him, whatever. And in any case, one week she told me, oh, he's getting deployed again. And she was like super sad about it. And I was like, oh, that sucks. Yeah. I was like, oh, that sucks. And then after that happened, I guess the way she had been texting him all the time, constantly, like she shifted that. And she started to be like, at first it was kind of very innocent. She was like, oh, you want to go here? Oh, do you want to go there? Like, do you want to hang out? Blah, blah, blah. And here and there, I'd be like, yeah, sure, whatever. But like, anytime I said no, her reaction was always like, she was very much be like aggressively trying to get me to agree to it.
Oh, and yep.
Then it started with the texting, like texting me all the time. And I wouldn't like answer. I'm a bad texter anyway. So it's like, I would take a lot of time before answering, but she was like a continuous texter, you know, like if you hadn't texted her back in an hour, there was like 50 things to read through. And it just kept escalating to the point where I was just kind of like, okay, you need to back off because like I have my own life, my own things going on. And I don't want to be like corralled into trying to hang out with you all the time. Like that's not me. And she lost it. She literally called me like 20 different times. She left me voicemails saying, like crying her eyes out saying, like she was first started talking as if like she was sad about it, whatever. Then it would escalate to like her being angry about it. And I was like, oh my God, she's going to murder me. Like, it was just like her mental health was not doing well. And it just got crazy. Like she was like knocking on my dorm room door and all this shit. And I was just like, this is insane. And I ended up having to just let the college security know. I was like, she's going a little bit nuts. I explained the situation. I was like, I know this sounds like very petty, but like, listen to this voicemail. And it was like the crazy voicemail. And they're like, oh, okay. Like, yeah, she needs help. And I ended up having like a restraining order against her. Like it was insane. It had escalated to that point. And yeah, it was wild. It was wild. So just as an FYI, you know, you never know what'll happen there.
I mean, I guess you're right. I don't. That's brutal though. And I hope that that doesn't happen. I've been in a similar situation, which actually I referenced on my 2 episodes ago, I think. Don't Get Off the Plane. You probably heard me reference like cutting off someone like that in my world. So yeah, I'm hoping that this person does not turn out to be like that, but we will see.
I mean, look, life is a reality show and that's just a really interesting episode, I guess.
I would love to be on a reality show. Like I often think people should just be filming my life because it is so unhinged at all times that I think it would be a pretty damn good TV.
Honestly, there needs to be a show like that. It should just be called Unhinged and it should just be a bunch of like mentally divergent people like in their lives. I would watch it. I mean, come on.
Okay. Do we need to become reality TV producers, you and I, and start making this happen? I think we do. I'm very here for this.
do you know how interesting that would be? Now, I don't know if that would backpedal the destigmatization of mental health because people would just watch it and have their opinions. But if we could get like one of each type together like, and in a house and have that be a reality show and just call it Unhinged, I would be tuning in religiously.
I think
religiously.
This is clever. This needs to happen. I want this to happen right now.
It must happen, actually. I think it just needs to be a thing.
Like TLC, Bravo, someone, where are you at?
TLC would probably not pick it up, I don't think. But Bravo would. Bravo's messy. Bravo would probably pick it up.
I feel like Bravo makes the most sense.
It does. It does. And E just wouldn't, like, if it was E, they wouldn't show all the unhingedness we need to show. Or Netflix. Netflix would pick it up.
Netflix would totally pick that up.
Netflix loves
who do we know a show like
that? That would be so fun. But yeah, it's just, it's nuts. It's crazy. And people like that always gravitate towards people who are very empathetic, who are very nice, who are going to put up with it for a much longer time.
And it's funny because as much as an empath as I am, I'm also very strict with my boundaries. And so even though I'm, of course, going to give you multiple chances and I'm going to let you show me your true colors before I make any sort of decisions, when you've crossed a boundary of mine, I stick to it. There is it's not a line in the sand. It is like a full stop. There is a electric fence, like in the Hunger Games where you cannot go any further. This is done, see you later, bye-bye.
Yeah. For me, people often get confused because I like to try and be kind. I like to try to be as kind as possible. However, and I think sometimes people, like when I'm being nice and things of that nature, like people just, they like to put you in a box. So they just see you in that way. Yeah. And so they think that they can cross boundaries. But for me, what's always really funny, and this, by the way, happens to me a lot in like dating and relationships, it's like somebody will tell you that, oh yeah, like I want you to do this or whatever. And I'll be like, not interested. And I'm like, yeah. And they'll try to like convince me. And I'm like, whatever. But they'll think that they got through to me in some way. And like, it doesn't matter because I don't put the energy into like arguing with someone, but I still don't do it. And that drives them absolutely insane. Yes. It's always like a situation of like, I know you spent an hour trying to convince me about this, but I never said I was going to do it. And no matter what you do right now, it's still not going to happen. It's just like that, like really drives people up a wall.
Been there, done that. You are speaking my language. Oh yeah. My gosh.
Yeah.
Anyway, should we get back to my stressors? LOL. We chatted March Madness. I think the other one that we'd shared was the weather. So I live in the gray Midwest. I'm not sure where you're located, but I live
currently in Atlanta.
Oh, okay. Nice. A little bit warmer than here. Yeah. So don't get me wrong. I signed up for this. You know, I've only ever lived in like frigid, cold places, but the Midwest it's totally different because it's gray and it's humid and winters are like 9 months. Okay. That's excessive, but like 5 months. And it's just, yeah. When it gets to be mid-March, I'm just so over it. And my seasonal affective disorder, my, you know, seasonal depression really starts to kick my butt. And it becomes a struggle to get out of bed. And it becomes a struggle to like roll into work and to, you know, just find motivation to do anything that I'm supposed to do. So yeah, it's just weather is a stressor. And I think anyone listening, hey babies, if you're a Midwesterner, hit me up and let's talk about what it does to your mental health because it is messy.
That's true for a lot of people. A lot of people go through this because of less sun, it's gloomy, it's cold, it just makes things harder than they need to be for a lot of people. I'm the exact opposite, by the way. I'm like, I don't know if I have seasonal affective disorder, but it's like flipped. I am thriving in the winter. Like love it because I feel less anxiety going places. Nobody wants to talk to you. Everyone's bundled up. They're here to get in, get out of the way. You know, yeah. And they just don't bug you. And I feel like people in those seasons tend to be nicer for whatever reason. I mean, you could probably factor in the holidays and people trying to be kind and stuff, but like people tend to like empathize better with other people. And so I just find that like my experiences in the winter are generally more positive. But then when it gets to summer, everyone's just in your face. First of all, the heat bothers me. Like if I'm hot and if there's even like a sparkle of any kind of sweat, it's over for me. Everything is ruined. The day is done. I hate
sweating.
Gross. And yeah, so I just, the summertime, like there's obviously pros to the summertime and stuff like that and to the spring, but generally spring, ew, I know everything looks vibrant and alive, but it's also just like hypo, like
it's like
just
wet and muddy though.
Wet and muddy. And then also like your allergies flare up. And yeah. Then the summer, everyone's just like on 10 and you're, I think everyone's mood is elevated, and that's probably why there's so many more crimes because the heat just makes you hot. And before living in Atlanta, I was living in Florida, which is America's basement, and just weird things happen down there. So yeah, like it's flipped for me is the point. Like,
interesting. I do better in winter. Why on earth are you living in Atlanta if you hate the heat?
I mean, I don't know. You know, like. I've lived in like 6 or 7 different states. I'm originally from New Jersey, and typically, you know, Northeastern is where I tend to reside. However, I got to a point where I was depressed and I was like, I just need to be around my family members. And a lot of my like core family members, like my sister, my brother, my mom, they're in Atlanta. And so I was like, okay, let me go to Atlanta, whatever. Then after about 2 weeks, you realize you don't even like these people that much. So it's like, why did I make this move? So yeah, it's just me bebopping around the different states and trying to figure out where I fit in. And the funny thing is always like, I always think it's my environment, but it's really just me that I get sick of. And then I'm like, oh, let me go to like another state and try to figure this out. Like, no, girl, it's you.
I completely understand. I have also lived in multiple states, and I have the longest I've lived somewhere since like growing up is 4 years. And I just get this like 2.5 year itch where after 2.5 years of living somewhere, I'm like looking for the next move. And then by year four, I'm like, okay, it's time to go.
Yeah. When things start to get hard for me, it's toxic. Like when things start to get hard for me, like mentally and stuff, I'm just like, it's because I'm here. It's because I'm in this place and this place sucks. And I start to hyper focus on everything outside of myself. I'm like, if I could just get out of here and go here, everything is going to be better. And then I make the move. And then for a while it is, because like everything is new again. And then you're just like, oh, we're back to this. It must not be me. It must be just like the place I'm in. Yeah, that's the cycle, the vicious cycle.
Completely understand. I'm on the same page.
It's all part of it. But the fun part is like, I just think also the addicting part probably too, is that like you get to reinvent yourself. Yeah. Every place you move, you're like, I'm this new person now. And it's fun.
And I thrive on change. I tell people all the time, like the best version of me is when I'm in a setting of everything's new. And maybe that partly is because I get to reinvent myself and no one knows me. And I'm a lifelong learner. I love learning. And so like wandering a new city and like getting lost on side streets and finding a coffee shop and a hole in a wall bar and a library and like all of these places that I love to visit, that to me is exhilarating. I just get so filled with the newness of it all. So like change for me, even starting new jobs, like all of it, like it's so fun. And I just thrive in that environment.
Do you, like, I agree with you and I have the same experience, but do you ever just feel on the flip side that like you possibly are just a person who vacations in other people's lives? Or because sometimes I feel that way.
I've never thought about that, but now that you say that, kind of, yeah.
Right?
Like, because I have friends all over the country and like I've been very close with them for a couple of years. And then I just bebop to the next place and I find someone that I latch onto, I become very close to, and then I move across the country again and bebop somewhere else. And yeah, I'm like kind of just vacationing in other people's lives.
It's like,
that's
it's
a like, good point.
Because people are always just like, you're so accepting and you're so like non-judgmental. And I feel like I can be myself around you. And I've always for many, many years, like, oh yeah, you know, that's me. Like, I don't like be yourself. Like, I love it. I love uniqueness in other people and stuff like that. But when I really started to like think about it deeply, I was like, am I this way because of the novelty of it? Is it fun because I'm only going to spend a few years here and your story is really interesting to me, just like it would be if you're a traveler, a backpacker, or whatever, like, and you meet this person living a completely different life than your own. And so it's completely interesting. And then you move along, but you're not in that person's like true day to day. You're just like a blip in their story. And they're just like a fun memory more than like an actual concrete character in your life. And yeah, like sometimes I think about that.
I love that thought. And I'm now going to start thinking about that all the time.
Oh, no.
Oh, that's too good.
Yeah. I mean, but even if that is the case, even if that is what I'm doing, I don't know if it's good or bad because I do enjoy it. And it seems like the other folks that I meet also enjoy it because, again, like I'm more open-minded and I've been exposed to all different kinds of people living all different kinds of lives. And so, yeah, like, I don't know. I don't know if it's good or bad.
I don't either. I'm going to mull this one over a little bit.
I'm glad I could give you food for thought. Well, let's segue into work. I know that's another stressor for you. So what's going on there?
Yeah. So I work in suicide prevention, which just by nature is stressful.
Yeah. Fun fact before you get into that, I once called a suicide hotline and they put me on hold. And I just want to put that out there. It's fucked up, people. Like, and it wasn't a 2-second hold. It was like 5 minutes, but they did save my life because I laughed about it. I was like, this is a fucking joke.
Like, I can't believe they put you on hold. I'm like, fucking right now.
They put me on hold and it made me laugh. I was like, you know what? This is life. I can't take life seriously because this is a comedy show. Like 5 minutes of being on hold with a suicide.
That truly is a comedy show. Oh my gosh. I have no words. Well, A, I'm glad that you're still here. B, I'm glad that you can laugh about it and that even in the moment you thought it was funny.
In the moment, it was supremely funny. Because imagine like tears streaking. You're like, I'm ready to end it all. And you call and these people are like, hold please. Like, it was just hilarious at that point. Because I was just like, you know what? Why am I even taking this so seriously? This is ridiculous. Yeah.
That's wow. That's incredible and unconscionable all at the same time.
But yeah, go ahead. So
I work in suicide prevention. So just innately, it is very, very stressful. I get the quote unquote fun side of things. So I do community engagement and public relations for the organization that I work for. So I basically am sharing our story and talking up what we do. I manage our email newsletter, our fundraising communications, fundraising and donor communications. I do all of our social media and like website management updates, like that sort of stuff. And then anything that's like public facing, like events or media relations, you know, that kind of stuff. So I get the fun side of it. So like I'm non-clinical, but it's still very heavy, you know, like going to work every day and knowing that my bills are being paid on someone else's life. Like ultimately, like the ideal in the world is that I don't have a job, that no one working in suicide prevention has a job because there would be no suicide. And like, that's just, it's sad that we as mental health care providers and suicide prevention workers, we have so much work to do. It's really, it's deflating at times. And so there is this just this heaviness every day of like showing up and doing the work and being on in this like very, very deep and emotional way that most jobs don't have. You know, a lot of people, they work 9 to 5 and they can just let it all go. You know, they forget about it. Whereas me and a lot of people in my field working in suicide prevention, it's very tough and you think about it every day, you know, and on the like really bad days where we are working with families who have lost someone and providing resources and support and referring out if someone's contacting us because they are in need, it's those days are happy and those days you just take it with you and you think of those people a lot. And yeah, so I just, all of that to say, my work is very stressful. So there's never a day where I'm like, oh yeah, I'm feeling great about things with work. And yes, I chose to pursue this field. I left education because I lost people to suicide and I felt deeply called to turn my pain into something that made me feel better, but also allowed me to share my experience with suicide ideation and with responding to loss, to suicide loss. And I think and I hope and I wish I manifest that I'm using that for goodness and that people see that in me and see that this is real pain and that this is real trials for me, just as it is for them. But, you know, like I also know that no one's going to do it if I'm not doing it. So yeah, I did choose this work, but I know that it's very, very stressful.
Well, on the flip side of it, I do have to commend you. And I think one of the things that suicidal ideation has told me, or when I'm really down and out, like some of the things that go through my mind, and I think probably a lot of people can relate to this, that have had those feelings, is that we don't matter. Like in the scheme of things, when you do have a job that is like, people say all the time, like, oh, don't stress. Like it's not brain surgery. Like it's fine. You know, if mistakes happen or whatever the case may be, and that's great. But at the end of the day, when you start to feel hopeless and you're looking for something to hold on to and you go over what you've done and what you've contributed to the world, and you can't find something that is really concretely meaningful, and you start to imagine your life without you in it, and you find that it doesn't look that different to you, it can be really debilitating. And I think, like, for you, the flip side of it, I would say, is that what you do matters so much to so many people that you can hold on to that at the very least. Like, you can say, you showing up to work today, you being that voice on the phone when somebody's reaching out or whatever it may be, is so needed and so impactful. And there's never going to be an occasion where it's like, I don't matter, because, like, you really, even in your own work, like, super, super matter. So just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And again, I mean, that's why I do it. If someone can hear from me just that they do matter, that's, I've done enough. I also know that I'm not going to save everyone's life, and that while suicide is preventable, I personally am not saving anyone's life. The work that I do, sure, it saves people's lives. I've been in positions where I've had opportunities to save people's lives by asking the question and, you know, providing direct support, or, you know, sitting with them while they call and talk to someone on the suicide hotline, you know, that sort of stuff. But, like, I know that it's not me that's doing it. It's, I'm empowering this person to feel that sense of hope, and ultimately to give them an ounce of strength, a shred of strength, to be able to make a decision that isn't ending their life. And so, honestly, like, I tell myself all the time, it's not me. It's not at all me. I'm providing the tools and the resources and the empowerment that person needs to save their own life.
Yeah. I mean, no one person could just, you know, say, oh yeah, I saved this person's life from suicide, I think. But I also feel at the same time that there are some things that people say to you, and in small ways every day, with or without the work directly that you're doing, but, like, mm-hmm. just in general, that really help people to have that sense of hope and, like, continue on. And if they didn't have that thing, they may kind of make a decision that's that in severe. It's crazy how little it takes to give someone hope when they're at the bottom like that. And so, yeah, I mean, I think everything you do in your work counts. And I'm sure it's very stressful, but it's also, like, it really makes a big difference too. So that's awesome.
Totally.
And I love it.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
You are very welcome. And yeah, I mean, I just think that's wonderful. I couldn't really do it. I think it's wonderful. So just to keep the ball rolling, I thought today we could talk maybe a little bit about some of our own negative traits, because I feel like a lot of people, when they start to think about themselves and they start to assess themselves, they can find a lot of negative things about themselves. And there's two things that happen. Some people, like, hyper-focus on them, and then obviously that's not good. And some people do things where they're just like, that's just the way that I am. And they continue on, like, bebopping around being toxic. And there's also this, like, yeah, it's like, it's the, this, like, sort of curated, falsely positive view of themselves and, like, just ignoring the negative. But I really like to talk about flaws within myself, because as we are now in the internet age and we get to, like, see people's lives the way that they want us to see them, it almost just seems like most people are perfect and we're just, like, not perfect. So I like to always have an opportunity to talk about, like, my own flaws, and hopefully people feel less alone in the things that they would like to improve about themselves. So anyways, what are some negative traits that you have that you feel are either a direct result of maybe some of your, you know, mental health struggles, or are exacerbated by your mental health struggles?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say my big one is being very self-deprecating. We all are our own worst critics, for sure. Like, that to me is not just, like, an anecdotal, like, hot button item to say, but I really do find a lot of truth in that. I judge myself way harder than I do anyone else around me. I talk down on myself a lot. Why are you lazy? Why are you fat? Why are you stupid? You know, all of these kinds of things. And ultimately, I think a lot of it comes down to my anxiety and also the shame that I carry, shame from recovering from disordered eating and eating disorders, and shame from being a member of the queer community, and shame from leaving religion because fuck all of that noise. And while I'm not going to yuck someone else's yum, that is not my thing. But being raised in the purity culture of the mid-90s, early 2000s, and being raised in a conservative rural home in the Midwest, of course, like, there is shame that I feel a lot about the life that I've chosen to live. My family and I don't see eye to eye on a lot of things. My past friends and I don't see eye to eye on a lot of things. And I've had to grow out of relationships. And I think that that's normal and natural and fine. But I also think that it has allowed me to feel this deep sense of shame and this deep sense of weight that isn't necessarily mine to carry. And so therefore, I just allow myself to get anxious by it. And then I just talk down to myself. So I'd say that's my big one, is being just very, very self-deprecating. Other ones, I think I have always been a people pleaser, but what I'm learning now as an adult is that it's less people pleasing and it's more me being an empath and trying to understand where they're coming from and putting myself in their shoes. And ultimately that's like, I put myself physically and literally into their shoes and I walk with them. And that allows me to get taken advantage of. And so I see it now less as people-pleasing tendencies and more of like, I've allowed myself to be taken advantage of because I'm trying to be a good person and lean into how they're feeling and what I know that they're feeling, even though they might not be able to express that. Yeah, I'd say those are my two big ones. One recently that I'm struggling with is allowing my anxiety and depression to control me and to dictate my life. I recently had a friend who told me that she'd noticed some changes in my behavior since knowing me in the last couple of years, and that it was almost like I had sunk into my depression and anxiety rather than like knowing that I have these things and like working past them. It was like I was sinking back into them and allowing myself to say, oh, I can't do that because I'm having a bad day and I just need to stay home, or leaving somewhere early because, oh, I'm having an anxiety attack, I can't be here. And then because I'm in that like mind frame, that this set of mind where I then allow myself to say and to narrate to other people, oh, I'm just a very anxious person. So I'm like, I'm sorry, like, it's okay. It's not a you thing. It's a me thing. I'm just very anxious, or I'm too depressed. So like, I just blame it on that. And so my friend calling me out on this and saying like, you've allowed yourself to be controlled by this. And I want you to say that I have anxiety and that I have depression, but that I am not an anxious person. I am not a depressed person, because there's a difference in allowing yourself to be in that space versus I have this thing and I'm going to control it and I'm going to not let it control me. And so that's a negative trait that I've been recently trying to pull myself out of, is just like being controlled by my anxiety and depression.
Wow. Those are really interesting ones. I feel like just starting at the first one that you mentioned, it's so interesting because people will be self-deprecating, but like, if you really imagine, one of the things that helped me is like, if you really imagine someone else and that it's just standing in front of you and it's just like, you're stupid, you're dumb, you're ugly, you're fat, like, you would probably tell that person to fuck right off. And sometimes I imagine sometimes when I get into that headspace, I imagine it as some other person saying that same thing to me. And then I'm just like, fuck off, because it almost seems separate from who you really are. It's just like this voice in your head that's like being negative. So it's like helpful to imagine that as like a real life hater and kind of talk back and be like, shut the fuck up, you're ugly.
it's also like, I would never call someone fat or ugly or stupid. Like, that is just so not who I am. I would never say that to another person, no matter how fat, ugly, or stupid they were. Like, I would never say that to someone. So he's like why I would am I never saying that to
actually
myself?
He's like, I would never actually say it. I would think it, but I wouldn't actually say it to them.
Yeah, exactly though. Like, so why am I saying it to myself?
I love that. That's great. Yeah. I mean, it happens to your point, like it happens to the best of us, the whole self-deprecating thing, but it can easily get out of control and like your thoughts can really spiral. So it's good that you are recognizing that and that you're hopefully trying to like work away from doing that. But yeah, like the other thing that you mentioned too with your, I think that's a great friend to be able to do that, to be able to call you out on it. Because so many of us sink into the whole thing of like, I am anxious, I am depressed, I am this, I am that. And it's like, that's separate. It's not who you are. It's something that you suffer from. You're not going to say, I am a broken leg. Like your leg is broken. You know, you're suffering from that. You're going to heal from that, hopefully. And yeah, that's so good. And it's so great that you have a friend that's willing to call you out on that. And it reminds me of that.
She is incredible. And it's fascinating to me too, because she is someone who overtly, regularly claims to not be confident or good with confrontation or like telling people like honest thoughts and feelings. And I'm like, girl, yes, you are. Like, you need to be more confident in yourself because you freaking are doing that right now.
Yeah, it's so much easier to be that way towards other people than it is yourself sometimes. So I understand that too. It reminds me of the episode of your podcast that we're kind of chatting about before the show, but that I told you that I loved, which is, if you guys go check out the podcast, I recommend this as a first listen. It's one of my favorite ones. It's, I believe, called Don't Get Off the Plane. And in this episode, the guest was talking about, I guess it was her mom that had told her this. Was it her mom or someone else that had told her this? And she told her mom, but either or, it was kind of like, oh, I'm having anxiety. The concept of like, I'm having anxiety, I want to get off this flight, I'm going to get off, you know, giving yourself permission to do that. And it was more so, I think it was her therapist that told her this piece of advice, which is to like, stay on the plane, like have the anxiety, have the panic, have this, have that, like stay on the plane and don't like just leave and not deal with it. And I thought that was really great. It was super impactful to me as a listener, because I was like, so true. Once you allow yourself to like, make excuses and not do things because of this mental health illness that you have, it's just like a downhill spiral. And then you're just like stuck in the house.
Well, because you never truly escape when you abandon it like that. And so it's just going to keep following you and chasing after you if you do get off the plane, metaphorically speaking. Whereas if you sit through it and you allow yourselves to feel and to process and understand why you're feeling that, you're going to be able to overcome that eventually. Maybe not in that moment, but like you're going to down the line be able to eventually overcome that feeling of anxiety. And most of the time, you're going to get on another plane and you're going to be able to do it again.
So true. And it's like, I know that there are some listeners out there that's probably thinking, and this is something that I've thought in the past too, you know, when you truly suffer from like anxiety attacks and panic attacks, they can be very debilitating. And even if you know that it's an anxiety attack or that it's a panic attack, if, for those of you who don't know this, like those things can truly feel like a heart attack. It mimics the symptoms of a heart attack. And so when people tell you to just breathe, or, you know, to your point, like it's all in my head or whatever the case may be, it's like great technique, cute piece of advice, but I literally feel like I'm dying. And I have to get the hell out of here. Like, so I acknowledge that part of it too. However, that's when you need to utilize the resources that you have at hand, whether it is medication or whether it's therapy and things like that. And by the way, again, like I know that medication is something that's still very stigmatized because people do not like to say, oh, I have meds or whatever, that you need this. And some people are just kind of like, well, I don't want to have to rely on this, but just remember that like life's different for everyone. Not everybody can raw dog life. Sometimes you need that support to keep going and hopefully shake some of those symptoms off.
Yeah. I raw dogged life for 4 or 5 years, whatever it's been. And let me tell you, I don't think I will ever go back. Like I am someone who at this point in my life, medications are so critical to my daily functioning that like I mean, it's part of like my normalization of the conversation of, you know, I tell people all the time, like, oh yeah, I'm on medication because, and like, I'm going to take it because if I don't, I'm not showing up as the best version of myself. And therefore you're going to be impacted. My work is going to be impacted. My friendships are going to be impacted. And so if you want me to be the best version of myself, I have to be on medications. And so that's kind of how I've started framing it to people rather than like, oh, I'm on medications, you know, like, because who cares? Ultimately, like if it's not for everyone, sure. I get that. I understand that. But like, if you want me to be the best version of myself, you're going to have to understand and not judge me for taking my medications.
Yeah. So true. As you say on your show, Daddy Lexapro.
Daddy Lexapro. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, because I empathize and I understand where people's mind goes because it's so crazy the impact that like movies and television has on all of us. Because before I was taking medication, it was just this thing and that I didn't want to take because I was like, I associated that with the images that I'd grown up with. Like somebody who is on medication is like crazy. And like I just didn't want to identify. I felt like by taking the medication, I would be admitting that I was that kind of a person and it just didn't feel right to me. And so that's the stigma. It's not true. All of that is not true. There are people that suffer just from mental illness. And just like you can get sick and you can get physically ill, you know, mental illness is just another illness. And you need, just like you need medication for a headache or whatever it may be physically, like you also sometimes need medication for your mental health and there's nothing wrong with it. And I'm a person like still to me, I say all of that, but still to me, still today, for me to say to someone else who is not on meds or who wouldn't necessarily understand, just to say like out loud, like, yeah, I have to take my meds. It just sounds hysterical. Like it's just in my own mind, I'm like, damn, I'm really that much of a crazy bitch that I need to wake up and like be medicated. That is fucked up. I still think that, but I try to work through it and I still obviously take those medications and just tell myself like, that's not true. But it is something that comes into my mind. I'm not
The narrative that I had to fight too, obviously, like that's something that we have always fought is the stigma of like being crazy and being medicated and being, you know, that woo-woo who's, you know, taking drugs. My thing that I had to get over, my mom works in a pharmacy and has since she was like 15 or 16 years old. And so like I've seen that world and I came from a world of opioid addiction in my hometown and pharmaceuticals were all over the place. Everyone I knew had them and was getting their hands on them. And my fear was that I was going to become addicted to these things and I would never be able to get off of them. And so I had to talk myself out of that fear as well. You know, it's not only am I afraid of being this woo-woo who's crazy and medicated, but I'm also having to talk myself out of this fear of becoming an addict and having substance use disorders, because that was stuff that I had been exposed to. And so I just want to talk some normalization into that. Like, it's okay to be medicated and to be taking prescriptions that you need to make yourself be the best version of yourself. I mean, I equate it to if you're a diabetic and you're not taking your insulin, you are not going to be well. It's the same thing with your anxiety medications, your antidepressants, your mood stabilizers, your what have you. It's the same kind of concept. And so I had to really, really talk myself out of that stereotype that I had been taught and had latched onto.
I mean, say it again for the people in the back. That is so true. I really relate with that. And I think that it's something too, for those of you out there that probably have some of these thoughts, like, be open about it. When you talk to your psychologist, psychiatrist, your doctor, talk about that because, and that just goes for anything medical, by the way, is like, I think it's been helpful for me over the years, especially being a more anxious person, to talk about what are some of your fears with taking certain medications or with certain treatment plans. If your fear is being addicted, it's like, say that, you know, say, hey, like, I have a fear of becoming super reliant on this and becoming an addict. And I think like that's something that might prevent me from wanting to move forward with this medication. They will talk to you about that. They will present you with other options. Mm-hmm. They will not judge you. So say it, and that will help the anxious feelings.
My number one piece of advice, just that same notion of say it, my number one piece of advice to anyone struggling with anything, whether it's mental, physical, what have you, be honest, not only with yourself about what you're feeling, but be honest with your doctor, your therapist, whomever it is that you are seeing who is trained and an expert in that field, because they're going to be able to talk through options with you and to understand and help you understand why you're feeling that way. You cannot help yourself to the best of your ability if you're not being honest, not only with yourself, but also with the professionals that you are seeking help from. And that, again, that's something I had to get over until I was brutally honest with my doctor and my therapist. I was just going through the motions. And until one day I walked into my therapist's office fully sobbing because I was so anxious about asking her about medications. I'd like worked myself up. I'd allowed my anxiety to about taking medications to control me. And it was like so bad that I was in a fit. And I had to just finally say, like, I have been thinking about this for so long, and it has gotten me to this point where I'm unable to like have a moment without breaking down. And she was like, okay, well, let's change that. She's like, let's start you on a really low dose. She's like, if you're anxious about becoming, you know, reliant on something or developing these disordered habits with your medication, let's start on a really, really low dosage. She's like, once a day, 5 milligrams, whatever, we can just test it out. That I found was not enough for me. So I just kept incrementally like adding higher dosages until I found something that regulated my anxiety and depression well enough to be the best version of myself. But it was not until I was honest with her and with my doctor that I was able to make that change. And honestly, the weight being washed off of me after I just shared that I was having these anxieties about my medications, I mean, I felt like a brand new person just simply speaking it out into the world. And I think that's also very important. Like, speak up, speak out. It's going to make you feel better. When you keep something inside, it just holds you down and it just puts this weight on you that is not yours to carry.
That is so true. And you couldn't be more right. It's so funny too, because the last episode that I recorded, it was about being a liar. And
I loved that episode.
It's just so funny, you know, that you say all of this, because again, it's so, so true, but it's something that, and when we talk about negative traits too, it's something that like I struggle with, because I'm like, large chunk of myself, when I go to therapy and all these different places, I want to be a character that can be like, I just don't want to be like the full, completely flawed version of myself. I lie a little bit. And it takes me time to like present my full self to like my therapist, and like they'll ask me, you know, like, oh, how are you? And I'm like, I'm fine. And it's like, clearly you're not fine, because bitch, we wouldn't be in this appointment right now. It's like, why are you lying? Like, you're paying. Now it's gotten to a point where like I'm paying to lie to someone, and that's just ridiculous.
You just nailed it. I mean, I was in this point, like at one place, I was in this place at one point where I literally would show up to my therapy appointments and she'd be like, so what's going on today? And I'd be like, I honestly don't think I have anything to talk about. Like, I'm feeling pretty good. And she'd be like, okay, let me ask you a couple of questions. And like 3 questions in, I'm like sobbing. I'm like, okay, I guess I do have things to talk about, and I lied to you.
Yeah. I mean, kudos to you for even admitting it after question 3, like you really got to dig in. And I've gotten to a point where I've said to therapists, like starting the relationship out, like, I'm a person, like, I understand as therapists, like, you don't want to push and you want to respect boundaries and, you know, get there slowly, but I fully will lie to you. And I just need you to like push more than you probably do on average with people, because it's just needed. Like, I don't know how to overcome that without you just being like a little bit of a bully and being like, listen, like, tell me the truth. Just admit to it.
Exactly. I need that challenge. I need that accountability.
Completely. Well, I mean, this has been so amazing. It's been great having you on. You're welcome back anytime. Again, thank for you. Those of you, of course, this is such a great conversation. I know that all the little babies out there will be benefiting from this conversation. So I love it. Again, if you haven't listened to the podcast yet, please go check it out. It's all in my head. And Joel, if you wouldn't mind telling everyone where they can find you again and your socials and anything else that you're working on.
Yeah.
I'm going to check out.
Definitely. Well, obviously follow the show, subscribe anywhere you listen to your podcasts. My personal favorite is Good Pods. I don't know what the babies use to listen to their shows, but I personally love Good Pods because fuck Apple and fuck Spotify, because there are corporations that are big and get money from trash people. And yeah, I use Good Pods. Independent podcasters unite. So subscribe, rate, review, all of that jazz. It's all in my head. You can just literally type that in and find it on any podcast player. I'm on all major platforms. On social, you can find me on Instagram at itsallinmyhead.show. And on Twitter, you can find me at allinmyheadshow. Is that correct? Yeah, there's no dot in that one. All in my head show on Twitter. You can email me at itsallinmyhead.show@gmail.com. And I'm working on a website and some merch updates. So I'm hoping to have that rolling out this summer. So give me a couple more months to judge that and make sure that it's working. Yeah, I want to give the Sisu Squad everything I can. I want to give the babies everything I can. I want to give any other random podcast listener out there everything I can. So we're here to build a community of people that are normalizing the conversation around suicide, mental health, and just our general challenges. So yeah, reach out to me, find me, DM me, email me, whatever you want. I am an open book and I will chat with all of you.
Amazing. Thank you again so much, Joel. Please go send him some love, follow him, and tell him that I sent you. Thank you so much again, and bye. I've got a routine that always shocks me. I think.